All right, folks, we are now back in session. Carla, could you please read our first time certain item number 220?
Age-friendly Portland Initiative report to council.
Good morning. Our first item today is the Age-Friendly Portland Initiative report to the council, which is introduced by Commissioner Fish. Just a brief bit of background here. In 2013, the Portland City Council adopted the Action Plan for an Age-Friendly Portland, which aims to move our city towards being a place where older adults can continue to thrive in our community. And this is our updated report. Commissioner Fish, take it away.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor and colleagues, I'm proud to serve as the council liaison to the Age-Friendly Portland Initiative. In 2006, the World Health Organization started the Global Age-Friendly Project based on two trends, population aging and urbanization. In 2011, Portland became the first U.S. city to be certified as age-friendly. And 2 years later, the City Council, as the mayor noted, unanimously approved an action plan for an age-friendly Portland. Today, that action plan is moving us towards becoming a better community for people of all ages and abilities. I'd like to welcome all of our panelists this morning. Alan, I understand that you're going to do the introduction, so take it away.
Yeah. Thank you, Commissioner Fish, Mayor Wheeler, City Council. It's my honor to be here today. I'm going to skip some of the introductions because I know we're tight on schedule about myself. But I want to explain that we have a great group today. So the first two presentations will include presentations from myself and from Metropolitan Family Service. Then we have Ruby Houghton Pitts and Shayna Pittman Frank, who will come from AARP Oregon and Elders in Action, and some very brief introductions from some of our volunteers. We'd like to leave time for engaging with you, answering questions to move forward. So to talk about these demographic imperatives, I think it's important to move beyond what the WHO's 2006 kind of demographic trends were and to understand what we in Portland and the region are dealing with. So there are two major demographic imperatives. We will continue to diversify as a region and we'll continue to age as a region. Metro estimates that our seven-county region is going to grow about 40% from 2020 to 2060, and the proportions of Asians and Pacific Islanders, Black, Latinx, and Native American populations will grow as the population of the proportion of white populations will decline. We're going to see a decline from 2010 of 77.8% in the white population to about 57.1% in our region. So I think it's important to consider as we look at aging that intersection with race and a number of other intersections as well. To get to the demographic imperative related to aging, it's really important to note that both the number of older adults and the proportion of older adults within each race category will continue to grow through 2060. Those look different when we're looking specifically at different race categories, which I'll describe next. Also, we're going to see a tremendous amount of cohort changes. So right now, we're kind of in the midst of a real interesting, some might call it generational battle, the pulls between boomers and millennials, kind of understanding where Gen X and the next generation kind of fit here. So the graph that is currently in front of you shows the changes of birth cohorts over time. So cohorts are essentially a generation or a group that's defined. And you can see by the time we reach 2060, the baby boomers will cease to be a major part of our age structure, which is interesting. But a very important thing to note, and we talk about generational conflict, and we say, well, millennials are larger than boomers currently. That is true. They're the largest cohort that we have that exists. But boomers are the elders of the future, right? As of 2 years from now, boomers will be covered by the Age Discrimination and Employment Act, right? They are becoming elders before our eyes faster than we note. So this is an intergenerational conversation. It's about folks who are younger and older, not just older adults.
Dr. Delatorre, could you just remind us or tell us what are the approximate spans of each of those things? Because I think some of us don't even know which group we're in.
Mm. Yeah, so yes, that's a good question.
I do not want to know which group I'm in.
Don't leave out Gen X because they keep leaving us out.
you know, it's interesting.
Not here, but elsewhere.
So I'm a Gen Xer. I watched an amazing kind of skit on Saturday Night Live where Kenan Thompson was basically saying Gen X is just sitting on the sidelines and letting everything burn down around us, which is not the case. We just happen to be a smaller cohort sandwiched between two very large cohorts. So cohorts tend to range from about 15 to 20 years. The boomers are from 1946 to 1964, the birth years. And I couldn't tell you with any specificity what the other birth cohorts were as far as the years starting.
But that's the anchor, and obviously the greatest generation is the World War I folks.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. So we're losing some of the value and the wisdom and experience from some of these cohorts, which is important to note as well.
Thank you.
It's a good question. So I'm going to get a little geeky here and talk about population pyramids. And the concept of a population pyramid emerged originally because we had more younger people at the base of the pyramid and less older people at the top of a pyramid. So it literally had a pyramid shape. As we move forward, the demographic transitions that are occurring in the United States and the world have us going from high mortality and high fertility rates to low mortality and low fertility rates. And what's happening is the rectangularization or the changing structure of our age pyramid. So they're no longer big on the bottom and skinny at the top. So what's in front of us here are the Black and Latinx populations as estimated by Metro. You can see in particular the 2060 population of the Black population is very kind of skinny in the middle. It's almost a rectangular going up and down, which means there are more older people on the top than there were previously and less younger people to support that population. We talk about dependency ratios sometimes, which are the number of working people in a population, requires us to think about working beyond a traditional retirement age, but also how we're able to support those communities. On the right is the Latinx population, and this has more of a structure that's akin to a pyramid, big on the bottom, small on the top. I think the most important thing to note is that this will continue to shift over time, and we won't have those large groups of younger people balancing out like we had previously. I'm going to lay off the review of age-friendly Portland, but I do want to note that starting in 2016, the City of Portland has provided support for the initiative. There has been work around housing and some of the things I'm going to discuss today. So that's an important context as we think about where we go next. With respect to the 2017-2018 funding, there are six major areas that we focused on: an Aging Well Conference, the Age-Friendly Business and Age Smart Employer Awards, age equity efforts, civic engagement efforts and new opportunities that are emerging, consultation with city bureaus and partners, and housing visibility. And I'm adding this image to the right. This is a paper that I co-wrote with a student who is finishing her master's in public health. And it just underscores the fact that Portland State is able to do unfunded work with the City of Portland to bring students to the table to work on field experiences, capstone projects, and other projects that I think is a real resource to the community. This is not something we're asking for funding for, just something I want to note because PSU is an amenity for the city and the age-friendly efforts. With respect to our consultation with the city bureaus and partners, I just want to note that our work with residential infill is focused on visitability, the concept of a barrier-free entrance and some other accessibility features within the home. We are working with Better Housing by Design, the multifamily project, to understand how social spaces and design for older adults, including visitability, should and could be implemented. And then more recently, we've been working with various folks from the Portland Water Bureau, as well as convening project staff across bureaus to look at new opportunities for alignment. The image that's at the right is very important to note. This is the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability doing a forum with older adults and members of the disability community. They were bringing them in to really explain what residential infill was and to try and get their input directly into that project. Additionally, we've been working with the Portland Housing Bureau on a report called Age-Friendly Living, Breaking Down Barriers to Accessibility Codes. For anybody who's wonky in inaccessibility, it's very complicated and difficult to understand. So we brought in some planners and some architects who essentially for $1,500 helped write a report to the Portland Housing Bureau to help align some of this. We continue to be a liaison to a number of different organizations that are age-related in the community, as well as state, national, and international organizations. And I'm working actively on the OCCL Code Change Committee and looking at how age in particular might be an area that we look at to include in our civic engagement of the future. Very briefly, I want to note that our Aging Well Conference in 2018 was excellent. We had Dr. Fernando Torres-Gill come out from the UCLA Center for Policy Research on Aging. Dr. Hill was the Assistant Secretary for Aging under President Clinton, so he was an amazing speaker to bring out. He has family here, which was a big reason why we were able to get him fairly cheaply. I think he really made some concessions for us. With respect to the Age-Friendly Business and Age-Smart Employer Awards, I'm going to defer to my colleague Shana Pittman-Frank to discuss that later. With our work on age equity and civic engagement, I would like to say that in that 2017-2018 funding, it was a chance for us to start the conversations and to start working with folks in the community. And so we've been able to begin some of those conversations, but we've got a long way to go. I think it's important to know that the coalitions of community of color have invited me to be a part of their board meeting and to try and start working with their member organizations to better understand what they're doing, where they're doing it, before we start thinking beyond what next steps could be there. It's really important to listen to those communities, and I appreciate Marcus Mundy's kind of embracing of the age equity work that we've done. With respect to civic engagement, in addition to the Civic Life Code Change Committee, our Civic Engagement Committee has made a really important point. They said civic engagement should be a part of everything that we do. It shouldn't just exist within a committee. So what can we do to go beyond our committee's work and to infuse this into what we're doing moving forward? So where do we go from here? It's important to note that Generations United International Conference is coming to town in June. I know that there are invitations out to a number of people that will either be speaking at or attending a kickoff and or the conference. We have a report that was funded through special appropriations this year called The State of Aging in Portland 2019. That will be released in the summer. It's a collaboration between the Institute on Aging and the Population Research Center at Portland State. We're on track for an October 2019 Age-Friendly, Age-Smart Business Awards, kind of second award ceremony. We are really interested in improving this understanding of age equity, civic and social engagement across the life course. We will continue to advance age friendliness in the work we do through our partners. And I'd like to leave my comments off by saying I highly encourage you to consider the age-friendly city government position that the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability had developed as a part of their directions to develop package. I know that the City Budget Office did not recommend that, but I think it's an important thing to consider moving forward. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Judy Strand from Metropolitan Family Service.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to see all of you and an honor to be here. I'm Judy Strand from Metropolitan Family Service, and my co-presenter, Koi Vu, is the director of the Asian Family Center from ERCO, and we're collaborating on something we call Experience PDX. I have to find the button, don't I?
Oh, yeah, sorry about that. Down or space?
Down or space. Nope.
Got it?
I got it?
Perfect.
No.
Yay.
Good.
That's not it. Alan, you've got to help
here
me.
Here comes Keelan.
I think someone's
she'll,
coming
she'll
to help us
come
out.
To the rescue.
Okay. I just need the one that looks like this. Green. There you go.
There we go.
So should I just push? The, which one? Push there.
Oh, no,
then where? Okay, great. Thank you. So Experience PDX is a model that's built upon a long-term program that we've had at Metropolitan Family Service called Experience Core. 1995, it started with the Secretary of State saying that we should unite older and younger people for the benefit of both populations and also for the benefit of the whole community. And it's been a long time since 1995 when Portland was one of those five pilot sites that started Experience Core. But I'm reminded that at that time, we had a local leader in Grandma Cherry Hendricks from North Portland who was an educator at Woodlawn Elementary. And she really inspired the way that we at MFS have crafted Experience Core locally, which is to focus on the mentoring as well as the academics and to build on natural community connection. The aspect that we wanted to really hone in on it with the opportunity of Age Friendly was to expand intergenerational connections across cultures. And our idea was to further youth success through the mentoring model that we were using that basically brings groups of elders not that old, 50-plus, into high-need schools to help them with particularly literacy, but also confidence about learning, interest in learning, and general development, as well as help them access needs. Many of the kids that we're serving have very little, and we often find that our mentors are discovering that children are hungry or lack clothing, and they're helping with those essential needs as well. And as we think about the model and start to question what does our community need today, we knew that we had this evidence-based model for literacy because the elders are reading with the kids and we're getting the results, those third grade reading benchmarks that we all are striving for. And we know that that the model was evidence-based for older adult health and wellness. So those were all proven by national and also by local evaluations. But what we felt we needed to do was to build on the cultural responsivity of the model as Alan shows us who we are today. So I'm going to take a minute to talk about that very briefly and have Coy share a little bit about our partnership. For those of you that are numbers-oriented, what we're talking about with this particular investment from the city was basically four sites, 21 hours of mentor training that was collaborative with ERCO. We reached 72 children through one-on-one mentoring and offered classroom support to 768 kids. And a lot of individual and group and classroom academic support and mentoring. This is part of Experience Corps. We actually serve 2,000 children in the overall metro region. All of the mentors, all 52 mentors, benefited from ERCO's consultation and training. We basically found that after working with ERCO, who we asked to help us connect with the elders from their communities, we wanted to find out if there was a way for us to adapt the model, which we were not able to do with the national model because the national model has prescriptive requirements such as dosage and how we deliver it. How could we adapt the model to speak to the refugee and immigrant elder vision about what that connection should look like from an intergenerational perspective? ERCO came in and did training about this, but they also asked their elders, what would you do if you were working with children? And their response to us was, we would not read to them. We would do oral storytelling. We would come to family night, and we might read stories there. We might teach some songs, but we certainly aren't going to volunteer. That just doesn't make any sense. If the kids need help, tell us what they need, and we'll be there. And that's a total shift from the model mindset that we had from 1995. So that's the challenge that we were trying to harness through this experiment in the last 2 years, which I think, as Alan says, is still needing more work, but has stepped forward in some leaps and bounds, as evidenced by these results. So you see that the students are improving in reading, they're improving in their confidence, and 97% of the mentors indicated improved health and well-being. The growing partnerships with culturally specific organizations has now fanned out. ERCO's our partner for this, but because of our work with three other culturally specific organizations, they're now helping us figure out how to make inroads into those groups as well. So SEI, ANEA, and Latino Network have been working with us to think about how do we reach their communities in new ways with this intergenerational approach. Three quick things that it came out of the qualitative study we did. Major shift on the part of the mentors, who are primarily majoritized white culture, although we do have some elders from a variety of different cultural backgrounds, and that is growing. We saw an awareness of inequities shift. We saw an effort to understand and an ability to understand the context with which the children were coming to school before. Sometimes I think we heard we don't understand why they don't have clothing or why they aren't coming to school on time. Now we hear, oh, I understand what's going on at home and in the community. We also saw a shift in a sense of the abilities of the mentors to meet the needs of the kids, which I think is very vital to the success of this work. I want to give a minute to Coy to share a little bit about her perspective.
Thank you, Judy. Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. I am Coy Vu. I'm the Director of Asian Family Center with the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, also known as IRCO. We're a nonprofit social service organization that is led and is for the immigrant and refugee communities of Multnomah County and Oregon, with direct services such as housing, employment services, senior services, educational enrichment programs, many of which are supported and funded by the city. So we continue to appreciate the city's support. I consider myself a 1.5 generation refugee. For those of us who are unfamiliar with that term, some of us call ourselves a first generation refugee. But for those of us who identify as 1.5, we were not born in the United States, but grew up here and was raised here in the United States. I've been in Portland for almost 38 years now, and we are oftentimes called the Bridger generation, where we are living in dual identities, with the old tradition speaking our mother's tongue, as well as American as can be, like anyone else in this room, with traditional, with Western values and ways of living. That's how I also feel IRCO has contributed and played a role in our communities. We are oftentimes the bridgers within our communities, with our diverse communities that we serve, but also with the organizations that we partner with and within generations within our communities as well. And for those of us who no longer live in our homelands, our generations, our immigrant and refugee generations, only go as far back as federal immigration policies allow. So what that means is our grandparents sometimes are not here with us. Our biological grandparents are not here with us. We have grandparents that we call grandpa and mama, but they're not biological grandparents. And so sometimes these coordinated experience and community events are the only experiences that our youth actually have with their elder generations. As Judy mentioned before, what perhaps works for mainstream communities, it may not always effectively work for newer generations of immigrants and refugees, whether it's because it's lack of transportation or lack of mobility or being uncomfortable in navigating spaces like a school system or a school. It's oftentimes not the most appropriate way for our elders to come and serve and support our communities and our youth themselves. what they would prefer, as what we have done in multiple generations in the past, is to pass down those stories through oral history, to oral storytelling. What I heard, I went to the Women's March just about a week and a half ago, and a Native American elder there spoke about how our elders are our wisdom keepers, and they hold our histories and our traditions, and that's the same way with our communities of color. That is the same way with our elders community and our API, African immigrant, Slavic communities. Storytelling offers many benefits. We talk about the cultural benefits or the historical and social benefits of it, but for children itself, it allows them to explore their own cultural identity. It increases their sense of identity and sense of belonging, which some of us may not have if we grew up here in the United States, in connection to our rooted communities, and then offer insights to universal life experiences. I can give you a list of other reasons why storytelling is important culturally to us, but it also provides us as an academic tool. It enhances listening skills, encourages active participation, increased verbal proficiency, and then use of imagination and creativity. All what we know is important in a holistic learning experience of a student. For our elders, who are oftentimes newer to the country, it also increases socialization, decreases isolation, and gives them a sense of purpose, which sometimes may not exist as well in this new country that they're still trying to learn to adapt and integrate to. So, you know, one of the things that I think Judy and I want to continue to express to our community partners and those of us in the room and to you all here today is a collaboration. This collaboration brings light to us that there is no one way of doing things, especially when we're talking about diverse communities. Each of our communities are experts to our own experiences and our own learning, and if we listen and allow ourselves to adapt, we together are able to not only be creative and do something special, but also effectively and responsively and respectfully serve our community as well.
Thank you.
We thank you for your investment.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Both of you. Thank you.
And I'm wondering if there's any questions specifically for MFS. We'll keep moving through at this point. Okay.
So, we're in a very tight space.
Sounds good. So I'd like to invite up Ruby Houghton Hicks from Pitts from Age Friendly, AARP Oregon, Shana Pittman-Frank from Elders in Action, Kathy Moyd and Leroy Patner, community volunteers. Our volunteers are only going to very briefly introduce themselves just to keep things moving along, but I would like to say that they've submitted testimony for the record.
Thanks, Alan. And I look forward to speaking at the Generations United Conference. That's going to
Thank
be great.
You.
Thanks for plugging. Good morning. Welcome.
Good
Thanks
morning.
Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Mayor Wheeler and commissioners. I also want to say thank you to the Gray Panthers and to Elders in Action for being in the room, and I want to pay them respect as well. It's a pleasure to be here today. It's a pleasure to be home. Thank you. My name is Ruby Houghton Pitts, and I'm the new director, statewide director of AARP Oregon. I've been away for a little while, but I'm glad to be back. AARP is a nonprofit, nonpartisan social change organization with a nationwide membership of nearly 38 million individuals, and 65,000 of us are right here in Portland. We work to improve quality of life for all people of all ages, helping to strengthen communities and fighting for the issues that matter most to Oregon families. An important aspect of our work in Oregon is advocating for livable and age-friendly communities. We have been a proud partner of Portland's age-friendly effort since the beginning, even before you were involved in the global and national age-friendly network of communities. And as usual, Oregon was a front runner, so thank you for that. AARP's network of age-friendly communities consists of villages, towns, counties, cities, and even states throughout our great nation. Where and how we live as we age is critical to our well-being. And you might say that after 13 years of being away, that's why I'm back. I want to share with you real quick, in story form, because that's the way I do it, just some of the aspects of an age-friendly community and some of those that actually are a part of each one of our histories, no matter how old we are. We all maybe grew up where there were some outdoor spaces and outdoor buildings, recreational facilities that were safe. We also had transportation where we lived. Whether it was mom and dad driving us or riding bicycles or something in that realm of public transportation. There was also housing. We had housing in our neighborhoods where across the street the granny lived. Or maybe upstairs is where my grandparents lived. But there was a range of housing in our neighborhood that was actually a value. And it was a value not because of how much it cost, but because of the people who dwelled inside. We also had social participation, like we have here today, up and down. And people did it in different ways, but now we're beginning to look at new ways of doing it. We had respect for social inclusion in our communities, and today we're trying to do that again. We also had civic participation. So there was employment, and there was opportunity for volunteerism, and then there was communication. Back then, people read the newspaper, they watched the 6 o'clock news, and somewhere around 11 or midnight, your folks said you ought to be home because the TV went blank and there was fuzz. Now what we want is accessible technology for people as they age, and we want it everywhere so that they don't become disconnected. And lastly, we wanted community support and health services. Because, you know, the doctor used to live down the street from us, and he was kind of wealthy, and we weren't. But he was in the neighborhood, and so was his office. And we want those things to be around us now as we age. What I just ran through here were the 8 domains of a livable community. And certainly, we are all looking for places and spaces where we can live, work, and play as we age. Now we have to be more deliberate in that attempt. And that's where AARP comes in, because we want to collaborate with you and anyone else who wants to make a community livable. At AARP, we believe that when A community considers the diverse needs of all of its people, every last one of us, 0 to 100 plus, no matter what we look like, no matter who we love, and no matter what we think. We just want to stand with you and push forward to make our communities here throughout the state more livable. Thank you for your time today. It is my pleasure to be home.
We're glad to have you. Thanks for being here. Commissioner Hardesty.
I just wanted to publicly welcome Ruby back home. Both of our last names have changed a bit in the time that you've been gone, but how wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. It's great to see you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Shana Pittman-Frank with Elders in Action, and I'm also the program manager for the Age Friendly and Age Smart Employer Business Awards. Elders in Action envisions an equitable society in which older adults are civically engaged, deeply woven into the fabric of our communities, and recognized for their inherent value. A voice for older adults in the Portland metro area, we recognize that the entire experience of getting older has changed. People live longer, work longer, and remain active and engaged citizens longer than ever before. This past October, we were thrilled to collaborate with Venture Portland, our age-friendly partners, and the city in the inaugural Age-Friendly Business Awards. And thanks to Commissioner Fish and Mayor Wheeler for being there. This innovative awards program recognizes Portland businesses that lead the way in serving older adults and those that build thriving multi-generational workplaces. With over 25 award applicants and winners such as New Seasons Market, United Community Credit Union, and Urban Development Partners, we showcased best practices and harnessed the desire of businesses to contribute to a thriving and equitable Portland. As a result of this program, businesses made new connections and learned about programs that elevate the work that they do. For example, United Community Credit Union learned about Multnomah County's Guardians Program, Public Guardians Program, and held trainings for their managers on the critical role the financial community can play in identifying fraud, abuse, or neglect of older adults. The city's commitment to age-friendly work has helped build bridges between Portland's economic development and the growth of a community where all ages can thrive. As our community strives to be an equitable place for all to live and work, age cannot be overlooked as an element of experience that causes people to be marginalized. For those already on the margins of programs and services, getting older adds a new layer of barriers and exclusion. Elders in Action and Age Friendly Portland Partners are committed to ensuring age is not a barrier to living well in Portland. Economic concerns, finding work past the age of 50, having flexible work opportunities, and being able to retire are of critical importance to older adults. While some employers recognize the importance of retaining an older workforce, many still do not. What it means to be an age-friendly Portland will evolve as our population grows older and our spaces and our programs change. Portland's work thus far has been a model for other cities, and since the awards in October, leaders from across the country have sought to learn more about the work we are doing here. We are all clearly doing something right. Elders in Action is honored to be a proponent of this work and is grateful for the city's commitment to ensuring older adults remain a valued, engaged part of our community. We urge you to continue this support, and we are enthusiastic about the city's consideration of an age-friendly position within the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. We look forward to working with the city in 2019, and I hope you'll save the date for the next Portland Age-Friendly Business Awards on October 30th here at City Hall. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Kathy Moyd. I'm 74 years old, so I'm definitely a senior. I moved to Portland 3 years ago after having served as a system engineer for 36 years at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. 2 years ago, I moved into a downtown apartment, and I've been extremely pleased with how easily I've been able to make a life for myself, even though I didn't know anybody. I've gotten involved in volunteer activities like Elders in Action, and I'm an AARP tax aide. And I take advantage of being halfway between the Schnitzer and Powell's to go to book signings and lectures. I've gotten involved in some movie groups and book groups, and between
the maxes, the, you know, the public transit, the compact nature, so I can walk to a lot of things, and meeting a few people who live downtown. I no longer have a car, and I'm finding myself perfectly able to participate in pretty much everything I want. So I'd like to encourage you to consider downtown Portland as a community for seniors, in addition to the concerns about the people living in outside areas by themselves and in retirement communities.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thanks for your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm Leroy Patton, co-founder and co-founder of the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, which is a statewide organization that addresses discrimination in housing. I'm also a member of the Governor's Commission on Senior Services for the State of Oregon, and I've been a member of the age-friendly organization since its inception in 2013. Without going through all the things that you've heard before about age-friendly communities, I'd just like to say that an age-friendly community is one in which older adults are respected. Their knowledge, skills, and resources and contributions are looked forward to, and they are integrated into the fabric of the community. Recognizing that our population is aging and public resources are limited, the economic, social, and personal benefits to be gained make clear the wisdom of taking action to create communities that are more age-friendly. I'm just here to encourage you to continue to support and guide the age-friendly effort and ask you to support them in any way you can.
Thank you, Leroy. Commissioner Hardesty.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to say thank you for your years of community service. You are certainly an icon, and I'm so thrilled to be able to say that from here. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
I made you blush.
That's what we've got for you. Very good. That's excellent. Colleagues, any comments, questions, or I'll entertain a motion.
Move the report.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Udaly. We have a second from Commissioner Fritz. Any further discussion? I'll reserve my comments for my vote. Please call the roll.
Fritz.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for putting on this report on the council agenda. Thank you to everybody who's here, and I echo Commissioner Hardesty's lauding of all of your work. And thank you for being great partners with the city over many years now. And this is, to me, is an example of how the commission form of government can work really well, that I was able to pass the initial resolution, and then Commissioner Fish has absolutely taken it and run with it. So it's fun to see what you, and satisfying to see what you're doing. Thank you to all of the community partners. We do need to continue to work on it. Happily, since the majority of council is over 60, you're kind of preaching to the choir here. We're certainly in partnership with people with disabilities of all different kinds in the community, looking at how can we become an all abilities friendly community, and certainly aging is part of that. So thank you so much for your work. Thank you for being here. And again, thank you, Commissioner Fish, for a really inspirational presentation. Aye.
Fish.
Well, I too would like to thank all of our special guests this morning. Alan, thank you for really organizing the presentation. Ruby and all of our friends, thank you for taking time this morning to present. I love these early morning council presentations on uplifting things, because they hopefully set a tone for the rest of our day. But as Commissioner Fritz said, growing older is something that many of us are experiencing, and I'm experiencing it personally. I'm now 60 years old and a proud card-carrying member of the AARP, and recently put together a trip to Los Angeles with my daughter and was taking advantage of all the great discounts, so I'm very appreciative. Because of your collective efforts, Portland continues to be a leader in planning and developing a community that is welcoming to people of all ages and abilities. And I am, just speaking as one member of the council, pleased to see that there is a proposal for an age-friendly position in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability's proposed budget. I think that's something that is worthy of us debating and hopefully taking up. It's been one of my priorities to have such a position, and it will help to expand our collective good work. I want to thank all the individuals who serve on our age-friendly Portland Advisory Council. And I think we actually have a number of people here today that did not participate in the panel but are very active. Could you raise your hand, Jay Bloom and others, if you're here but you didn't actually testify, just so we can acknowledge and thank you for being here? Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I got my start in this work many, many years ago before I had the honor of being elected to the council, when then County Chair Ted Wheeler put together a task force on vital aging. And Jay Bloom staffed the task force, produced an excellent report. And one of the things that I took away from that is that there were cities across the country that were seeing the graying of their population as somehow a burden, that somehow it was going to end up taxing their ability to provide services and other things. Portland was one of the first cities to view it as a great asset. The social capital that comes from having older adults that have life experience, the fact that older adults want to live downtown, want to access arts and culture, want to contribute and volunteer in so many ways. You're a classic example. And so in Portland, we see the aging process as not just inevitable, but as a great asset to the fabric of our community. And I think your presentation makes that eminently clear today. I want to thank Asena Lawrence on my team, who is the person on my staff who does coordination with Age Friendly Portland. And I'm just proud to be on a council that has worked hard on these issues for many, many years and continues to support the good work that you're doing in the community. So big thank you, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Hardesty?
I just want to say that the work that you're doing is vital. As our population ages and lives longer all across the board, it is absolutely important that we maintain that community fiber, that community vibrance. And I love being a community elder. I got to tell you, there's a lot of power that comes with being a community elder, right? Because you don't actually have to wait for permission. You just do what you need to do. And I hope that all Oregonians, especially those who live in the Portland metro area, have that opportunity. I live in East Portland, where those opportunities are not as broad for seniors. Transportation is a big issue. Infrastructure is a big issue. Having access to the arts and to music is all a big issue. So I applaud the work that you're doing, but I hope we don't end it downtown, because we have some fabulous seniors in every corner of this city who absolutely need to have access to build community and to know that they are valued and that they continue to contribute to our community. So I'm also very happy to vote aye.
Udaly.
Well, as 2 months shy of my 49th birthday, I guess I'm the youngster on the council. But with the recent passing of my great uncle, who was the last elder in that generation, I have now advanced one step closer to elderhood, I suppose. Thank you for the report. Thank you all for being here, Mr. Patton. It's an honor to have you here, and I hope that I can continue to affirmatively advance the fair housing rule. Maybe you could come back in April for a little something we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah. I guess I'll just say, you know, if we think of the average person as the norm or the majority, we're really failing to develop policy that's going to serve our whole community. What we should be doing is addressing the needs of people at extreme ends of the spectrums, which would be perhaps young children, our elders, people right. with disabilities, and the middle will take care of itself. So I'm really excited to work with all of you, excited about the possibility of this position, especially if we're going to be talking about universal design principles that will help not just elders, but anyone with access challenges in the community. And, that's it. I vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, this has been a fantastic presentation. Commissioner Fish, thank you for bringing this forward. And Senator Lawrence, your policy director, I know worked very hard to put together what I think was a fantastic panel presentation. So thank you for that. Slight non sequitur. You've all been reading about this scandal that's unfolding around college admissions. And it's really hit a nerve with people in this country. And the larger narrative is it's causing us to reassess our values around privilege, around hyper-competitiveness, around what it means to support young people as they seek to gain footing in the world. And I believe on a whole host of fronts, including related to aging, we are reassessing some of our cultural assumptions about aging. And what I love about this presentation is really twofold. Number one, I just learned that I'm part of the youth movement on the city council. So I cannot wait to tell Katrina that. Number two, aging is a strength. It is a strength. And it is also the only thing that binds us all together. Every one of us, without exception, we are all aging, and we will all become, God willing, older adults. And with age, as has been said for thousands of years, comes wisdom. Aristotle said it way back when. It is still true today. So there is that wisdom, there's that knowledge, there's that lived experience. Yes, there are the battle scars, there are the trials, the tribulations, the great losses, the great sadness, the great joy. And sharing that experience with younger people in our community is extremely valuable, and it's also an imperative. And by making aging something vile, something bad, something to be fought against, we have actually removed from our society and our spectrum, our arc of values, this notion that in the absence of older adults interacting with supporting and bringing up the next generations, we have actually disconnected from something profound and something critical to the development of our own culture, in my view. And this idea of an age-friendly community is one that is extremely important to all of us. You know, another sort of aside, I got invited to a birthday party this week, and I couldn't say no. I'm going to 100th birthday party over at the Providence Elder Place for a resident of Portland. She's a lifelong resident of Portland. She's contributed to this community, therefore, for 100 years since basically the end of the First World War. And I was honored to be asked. I was honored to be included in that experience. And I just want to thank all of you for the leadership you're providing in reconnecting our generations, and in so doing, connecting us back to a value that we used to hold dear.
Right.
At a time when we revered our elders and we valued aging, and we got to get back to it. And it's never been more obvious to me than it is right now. So thank you for all of that. I look forward to continuing to engage in the work with all of you. Commissioner Fish, thank you for being such a fantastic advocate for our age-friendly initiatives here at the City of Portland. I vote aye. The report's accepted. Thank you.